Hey, Bible nerds, this is Dr. Manny Arango, and I'm your host for the Bible Department podcast powered by Arma. This podcast follows a Bible reading plan we created to help you read the entire Bible in a year. You can head to the show notes or thebibledepartment.com to download our reading plan and join the journey. Family, welcome to day 321. We are continuing our trek through the book of Job. We just crossed over the halfway point yesterday, okay? Job chapter 28 is the halfway point, is the center of the chiasm. And so today we've got Job chapters 29, 30, and 31. All three of these chapters are known as Job's Oath of Innocence. That's right, Job's Oath of Innocence. If you haven't read today's reading, you want to stop this video, pause the audio, and go get the reading done, then come back. I promise we will wait for you. For everyone who's already done the reading, I hope that you enjoyed today's reading. I certainly enjoyed today's reading. Obviously, it's all Job, okay? So, and like every day, I'm going to give you as much context as I can, and then we'll dive into some nerdy nuggets. My plan today is to give you three nerdy nuggets and then leave the episode off with a timeless truth. So, if you've done the reading, then I want to dive right into context because today's a context-heavy day. I got a lot of things to say. Now that we're over the halfway point of the book of Job, I feel like there are some things that I probably should have said sooner that I really need to say. And we also just got to talk through what is going on in chapters 29, 30, and 31. So just let's put these three chapters in context of the whole book, okay? From this point on, we are about to get three monologues, okay? Three monologues. That is going to balance out the three dialogues that we got from chapters 3 to chapters 27. From Job chapter 3 all the way to Job chapter 27, we get three sets of dialogues, okay? Remember, Eliphaz will speak, then Job, then Bildad, then Job, then Zophar, then Job, okay? And we're going to get that same conversation cycle three times. So we've got three dialogues from chapters 3 to 27. Then, smack dab in the middle of the book, we're going to get chapter 28, which is an interlude on how to find wisdom and who gives wisdom. From this point on, okay, from chapters 29 to 31, we're going to get Job's monologue. And then from chapter 32 to 37, we're going to get a monologue from a gentleman named Elihu. Okay, Elihu. If you just want to go ahead, look at chapter 32, you're going to see a new name there. And most people think maybe he was standing there the whole time listening to Job and his three friends talk, just kind of saying nothing. He is definitely the wisest of these friends. He's going to have their perspective, though. So we get him from chapter 32 all the way to chapter 37. Okay, so a lot of Elihu. And then chapters 38 and 39, God finally is going to talk. So we're going to get a monologue from Yahweh. Okay, so Job's going to give a monologue. That's today's reading. The next 2 days on this podcast is Elihu's monologue. And then we're going to get to Yahweh's monologue when we get to Job chapter 38 and 39. And then Job chapter 40 to 42 is an epilogue. Okay, so we had a prologue to the book, which was narrative. And then we're going to get an epilogue to the book, which is also going to be narrative. And that kind of frames the book. So if you want to think, okay, how's the book of Job framed? It's framed with three dialogues at the beginning of the book, three monologues towards the end of the book, with a center of the chiasm being chapter 28, which is the interlude on wisdom, and then narratives at the very, 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 very end of the books, or beginning and end of the books. So the end and the beginning match up, the meet to the right and left of the middle match up, and then the chiasm in the middle obviously doesn't match up. It is smack dab in the middle for a reason. It's the center of the chiasm. All right. Hopefully that just gives you context for the entire book and how the book flows from a 30,000 foot perspective. I'm going to offer a little bit more context. Okay. This is an oath of innocence, and These oaths of innocence were actually pretty common in the ancient world. There are lots of examples of oaths of innocence. This is an ancient legal device that has been recorded in Israelite, Babylonian, and Hittite records. It is basically an informal legal oath that exists outside of a court or the gates of the city that are seen in scripture. It is not part of a trial. It involves no witnesses, but instead is a statement of innocence in the form of a vow to the gods or God. This is the heart of Job's claim and vow to the Lord that we actually already saw. Remember in Job chapter 27, verses 2 through 4, we kind of got a small version of this oath of innocence. But this is a actual legal device, all right? This is an ancient legal device that Job is just is like, I have no other option but to plead my case in this formal way. I know that I'm innocent, and we got to get to the bottom of what's happening, okay? Last bit of context is kind of wrapping a couple of things up, some loose ends. I should have probably said this on day one, so I should have said this when we were in Job chapter one back on day 312, all right? Like 9 days ago, but saying it now. The land of Uz, okay, where's Uz? That would have been the equivalent of us as Americans saying like Timbuktu. Timbuktu is a real place, but when we say Timbuktu, we don't really mean it literally. We just kind of mean like middle of nowhere, right? Like, oh gosh, like I had to drive to Timbuktu. It's a figure of speech, and I think that's just good for people to know. Like Uz would have been a borderline figure of speech. And so that doesn't mean that the story of Job isn't historically true. It just kind of frames it for us to maybe realize there's some literary license. There's some literary creativity. So only because when we think, is a person like Job even possible to exist that is super, super blameless? Well, Romans is going to say, for all of sin have fallen short of the glory of God. Now, again, the point, okay, of Job's blamelessness is essentially that he doesn't deserve what's happening to him. It's not really to showcase his blamelessness as much as to showcase how unfair and unjust treatment he's receiving. Okay, very, 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 very last bit of context, okay? I already warned you, it's a context every day, is that what tends to happen, you know, when we look at the Satan, okay? So Job is going to have a creature that is known as the Satan. First of all, the Satan is allowed into God's divine counsel, into God's divine court. So it doesn't seem like the Satan is like not invited or not allowed to be there. It seems like the Satan figure has an important role, actually. Second, Satan is never used as a name for the serpent in Genesis chapter 3. Never. Okay. So I think that there's a misconception that Satan is like some name or like a nickname or like a proper name that we refer to the embodiment of evil, you know, that we, like the devil. But that's not true. Okay. So that's that. Next, it's the Satan. So there's other places in the Hebrew Bible that are going to use that language, and it simply means the opposer. Okay. The accuser. 1 Kings 11 is going to be one of those places. And Numbers chapter 22, verse 22, is going to be another one of those places where humans are going to be referred to as the Satan because they are standing in opposition against other humans. Okay, so that's just interesting to know. Here's something that Tim Mackey from the Bible Project kind of asks. This is a question. Is the Satan figure wrong? Like, nowhere in the text itself does it say that he hates Job, that he hates God, or that he's fallen. Everything about this actually would suggest that the Satan character has Yahweh's best interest in heart. That essentially, Yahweh has a Proverbs and also like a Deuteronomy perspective, like, right, the righteous get blessed. And Satan kind of challenges that, or the Satan challenges that and says, is that a good policy for ruling the earth? Like, is he really righteous? Or is it not smart for him to be righteous because you reward righteousness? And the Satan brings up a great point. It's like, is Job actually righteous? And the suffering that he has to endure proves beyond a shadow of a doubt that we thought you were righteous, but now we know you're righteous, because it's easy to be righteous if there's stuff you get out of it. It's kind of harder to be righteous when you know that you're not doing this to get anything or receive anything. It's kind of like sometimes in church, I get a little uncomfortable when we only get people to give based on motivating them or inspiring them to believe that if they do give, they'll get something. I do believe that sowing like results in reaping. I do believe that. But however, we have to be careful not to train people to think that, you know, by giving, they are just automatically going to receive. I do think it's important to communicate to Christians. Sometimes I give just because it's the right thing to do. I give because the Bible teaches me to do it. And I don't do it in order to get. If I get things, that's fantastic. That's a cherry on top. But that's not my primary motivating factor. I think sometimes we can bring in revelation that we get later on in the Bible, and then we can read that into the book of Job. But if we just look at Job by itself without any additional information, I don't know that we would come to the conclusion that the Satan character has bad motives. And that's an idea that, you know, that's a question. I'm not saying that's where I land. I'm just saying it's a good question to ask. Does the text in and of itself, with no additional outside information, outside of the book of Job, lend you to believe that the Satan character has like bad motives or evil motives? It kind of sounds like the Satan character is just thinking about how easy it is to take advantage of God if this is his policy. Okay, so that is context. All right, now let's get into some nerdy nuggets. Okay, in order to even understand Job's oath of innocence and his friend's belief that he's not innocent, you kind of have to understand these three levers or this pyramid, okay? At the top of the pyramid is God's justice. God is just, okay? The second piece to this puzzle is God's policy, then, of strict reward or retribution theology, okay? If he's just, then the only just way to operate the universe is by a strict policy of retribution and reward, okay? So this is that God is just. This down here, this part of the triangle, is God's policy of running the world. And then this over here is Job's innocence or guilt. And so this creates a triangle. Now, I remember one time I went to a mechanic and there was a sign that says, you can only have 2 out of 3. And it kind of had a list of 3 things. And it was excellence, speed, price. Like, if it's going to be fast and cheap, it's probably not going to be excellent. If it's going to be fast and excellent, it's going to be expensive. If it's going to be cheap and excellent, it's going to take a long time. Okay? So this same triangle exists between fast, cheap, and excellent. Fast, cheap, and excellent. Okay? Do you want quality? Do you want speed? Or do you want the right price? You can't have all three. And so what you begin to do is it's like, when you toggle speed and cheap, excellence immediately toggles off if you toggle those two on. So what you begin to see with Job and his friends is that the moment they toggle on, God is just and Job is innocent. Okay, that's how Job is going to toggle it. This is Job's toggle. God runs the universe on a strict retribution policy and I'm innocent. Therefore, he concludes God's not just. The friends then are claiming, no, God is just, and he runs the world on a strict retribution policy, which then means Job must not be innocent. So based on what they toggle on, there's an automatic toggle off. Here's what the whole book of Job is actually getting us to try to understand. The one factor that nobody's willing to toggle off is that God runs the world by a strict retribution or reward policy. That's the toggle. If we toggle that off, then we can have God being just and Job being innocent. And that is honestly what's going to happen, which means the book of Job is not just about how to handle suffering, but it's about understanding the kind of world we live in. And has God established the entire universe to operate according to a strict retribution and reward policy. That's like asking, has God created the earth to operate according to a policy of gravity? And the answer to that question is yes. Gravity is a law. If you try to defy it, you're going to be up a creek without a paddle. Well, you're probably going to be down the creek because gravity still works, but you get what I'm saying. Okay. So on that toggle of Job's innocence, God's justice, and a strict policy of divine retribution and reward system, I want us to go ahead and zoom in on Job's innocence because that's what these three chapters are all about. Okay, so three nerdy nuggets. Okay, that was all context. My gosh, that was almost the entire episode just on context. Three nerdy nuggets. We're going to fly through them. Family, the wait is over. My brand new book, Crushing Chaos, is out now and available everywhere books are sold. Literally today, I walked into a Barnes & Noble and I signed a bunch of copies at a physical location. So you can grab this book at a physical Barnes & Noble, or you can go to a Books A Million or Amazon or anywhere books are sold and grab a copy. If you enjoy reading the Bible from an ancient perspective, if you understand that the beauty of Scripture is actually knowing it in context, then you'll love this book. And if there's any chaos in your personal life, I think that reading the Bible from an ancient perspective can actually help to crush the chaos in your life. I think this book is going to be a New York Times bestseller. I really do. I think we wrote a good one. I think you should get a copy today. All right, back to the episode. Job chapter 29 is all about a positive confession of his past life. How awesome his past life was, how blessed he was, but also how innocent he was. And then Job chapter 30 is a confession of his current suffering. He moves from the past into, but what is my status right now? So you could do a good compare and contrast between chapter 29 and 30. And then chapter 31 is we get a negative confession. These are a series of self-imposed curses. Essentially, Job is saying, if I'm guilty, then God now has license to make my life even worse. Okay, so let's kind of dive into these. Job 30 is really self-explanatory, so I'm only going to really take any kind of time to deal with Job chapter 29, which is his positive confession of what his life used to be like, and then Job 31, which is a negative confession or a series of self-imposed curses. Job chapter 29, starting in verse 12, okay? Job is going to tell us that he delivered the poor, that he caused the widow's heart to sing, that I was eyes to the blind, I was father to the needy, I broke the fangs of injustice. Okay, Job's a hero. Now, this is the irony, is that all the things that Job is going to say about himself are all in direct opposition to the things that Eliphaz accused him of in chapter 22. This is what Job chapter 22, verses 6 through 9 says. You demanded security from your relatives for no reason. You stripped people of their clothing, leaving them naked. You gave no water to the weary, and you withheld food from the hungry. Though you were a powerful man owning land, an honored man living on it, and you sent widows away empty-handed and broke the strength of the father, of the fatherless. So Job, in Job chapter 22, obviously Eliphaz says all that, and it's almost like Job tucks it all away, and he responds to it here in Job chapter 29. Okay, so this is Job just describing his past life, but also how blameless his past life was, and how blessed he was in direct proportion to how blameless he was. Okay, Job chapter 30, self-explanatory, but then Job chapter 31, okay? Job chapter 31, verses 1 through 4 and verses 9 through 12, Job proves, he also claims and proves that he's innocent of sexual immorality. Then Job 31, verses 5 through 8, he proves that he's innocent of dishonesty. He's also innocent in his social dealings. That's Job chapter 31, verse 13 to 23. And then he's innocent of how he uses his wealth. That's Job chapter 31, verses 24 to 25. And then he's innocent of idolatry, which is Job chapter 31, verses 26 to 28. And then he's also innocent of being vindictive. That's Job chapter 31, verses 29 to 30. And then Job is also innocent of hiding sin, okay? Concealing sin. That's Job chapter 31, verses 33 to 34. And last, he is innocent of exploitation. That's Job chapter 31, verses 38 to 40. In other words, he's innocent of all things. So if he is innocent of these, and so God will not judge him for them, then why has God judged him in the first place? Okay, so this is an oath of innocence. The point, okay, of chapter 31 is that if he isn't guilty, that's the point. I'm not guilty. So by imposing these self-curses, he is effectively swearing by God that he is innocent. If God doesn't make his suffering worse, then he is not guilty of any of these things. Let's move right into our timeless truth. I think that it is, you know, since the dawn of time, people have been wondering, why do bad things happen to good people? And my challenge today is that you and I aren't even as blameless as Job. Like, Job complains, and if you just read the level of innocence that he has in these three chapters, you realize, man, I'm not even coming anywhere close to Job's righteousness. I should probably not complain when bad things happen to me, okay? Not only is Job coming to the awareness that God is holy other than him, I want us to realize we're holy other than Job. Like, this is a very, very, very righteous man. I don't want that to get lost kind of in the sauce. And we kind of sometimes have this bizarre sense of entitlement to God's goodness and his grace, but we're not even as righteous as Job. And so Job's just righteousness and innocence alone, I hope, inspires you to not complain, but also inspires you to live a fruitful life, to live a wise life, to live the kind of life that is even halfway as blameless as Job. All right, tomorrow we've got day 322. We're going to be looking at Job chapters 32, 33. It's going to be fantastic. Just two chapters tomorrow. We've got 4 days left in the book of Job. I'm proud of you, especially if you're on a streak. I love you. I'll see you tomorrow. Peace. Thanks so much for joining us on the Bible Department podcast. You can find us online and learn more about the show at thebibledepartment.com and on Instagram at thebibledepartment. If you enjoyed this episode and want to dive deeper into the Bible, you can get free access to our library of courses at thebibledepartment.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow.